Welcome back to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. My name is Wayne Kimmel, managing partner of 76 Capital, the sports tech venture capital company. On this show, I interview top sports entrepreneurs, athletes, and executives who are truly shaping and many times changing the overall sports landscape. Today, we're going to talk sports betting and new media and Hi-Li with Scott Savin, the CEO of Magic City Casino and Hi-Li. Scott, welcome to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show.
Thank you, Wayne. It's a pleasure to be here. And as you know, any opportunity to talk Hi-Li is an opportunity not to be missed by me.
Well, I said we're going to talk sports media and betting and this and that, but we're talking Hi-Li. That's what this is all about. So Scott, tell us all about what's happened down in Miami and what you're doing with Magic City Hi-Li.
Oh my God, I will be rambling on here. So let's divide it up a little bit. So, you know, Hi-Li was huge up and down, primarily the East Coast of the United States in the 70s and 80s. And in 1988, I believe, the players go on strike. Longest professional strike in the history of professional sports, lasts just shy of 3 years. And when the players come back, they think it's all going to be just like it was. Lo and behold, no, it's not. Basically, Hi-Li at that point is a broken sport, forgotten by a lot of people who have turned their attention to betting on other sports, becoming fans of other sports. And in Florida, at the same time that the strike happened, they started cruises to nowhere and the lottery came in. So sport gets dealt this huge blow and basically is on this massive downward trajectory that lasts really from the early 90s for a good period of 20 years. Gets a little bit of a revival in Florida because they have casinos in Dade and Broward County, which is the Miami and Fort Lauderdale markets down here. But the entitlement to a casino, you had to operate a paramutual sport. And paramutual sports are horse racing, dog racing, and Hi-Li. So you had two facilities down here, Dania Hi-Li and Miami Hi-Li, that got their slots because they were playing Hi-Li. And basically, they take Hi-Li, they kind of push it off into the corner because they have to keep playing Hi-Li to keep their slot machines. And that breathes this sort of artificial life back into the sport of Hi-Li. And that's really where it was right up until 2017. In 2017, we at Magic City had been a dog track, the former Flagler dog track, for 50 some odd years. And, you know, we were seeing the same kind of sport in decline, dog racing, huge in the 50s and 60s, 10,000 people coming out. We had Frank Sinatra here, Jimmy Durante, you know, all kind, you know, Muhammad Ali, all kinds of celebrities coming out for dog racing. And then it gets this stigma of cruelty to animals and all these other things that had gone along with dog racing. So we were sort of anxious to get out of the dog racing business. We said, you know what, let's change our permit from dog racing to Hi-Li. And we got sued, we went ahead, we won the lawsuit. Now we're gonna play Hi-Li. Our problem is we had no Hi-Li players. So it's not like football, baseball, basketball. There's not this supply of players readily available. Most of the Hi-Li players come from the Basque region of Spain. And now a lot of them are living over here in the U.S. They're second generation, but very, very narrow supply line of Hi-Li players. So we're great. We're ready to go. We have no players. So we have an affiliation.
I got to interrupt you for 1 second. So you were great. You're ready. No players. But you at that point, and I'm going to let you talk about this, but like, had you built the court, the fronton? What is a fronton? Have you put that all together at that point?
Absolutely. So we had ordered a court from Spain. Typically, a fronton is basically three concrete walls and a concrete floor and an open sidewall. And, you know, you could have seen Hi-Li on Miami Vice or some episodes of The Simpsons. It's kind of runs through. There's a cultural references to Hi-Li sort of made here in Mad Men had an episode where they talk about Hi-Li. We decided that we're going to have a court built in Spain and shipped over here. And our big difference is it's going to have glass walls at either end, so that people could actually stand in front of the Hi-Li wall, which they'd never been able to do before, and see this ball coming at them at speeds of up to about 150 miles an hour. So we're designing this court in Spain. It has to be built there, and they build it, and then they take it apart, and then they're going to ship it over here. And it goes inside of a building that we had here at the casino. And we need players. So we send out this sort of call to arms, if you will. We talk to the University of Miami, and the owners here have, you know, tight relationship with the University of Miami. And they send out this email blast to all the ex-athletes that had played any sport at UM for the prior 20 years. And it's a crazy email blast. It's like, hey, you want to become a professional highlight player? You know, reach out to this person, respond to this email. And I think most people thought it was a joke, but we got about 25 responses. And, you know, where are we training? What do we have to do? What do we need to know? This, that, and the other thing. None of these guys had ever played highlight before. Most of them didn't even know what the sport was. But they're like, oh, a chance to be a professional athlete. Okay, you know, I'll give it a shot. So there's an old training facility in North Miami Beach called North Miami Amateur Highlight Fronton. And we rented that out for about 5 months. And we started with about 20 guys. We hired an 8-time world champion highlight player to train them. And we had a couple other people helping us out. And they trained for 6 months. At the end of the 6 months, we anointed them. You are now professional highlight players. Here you go. You're going to come over to this fronton we built at Magic City Casino. You're going to start playing professional highlight. And they were horrible. I mean, you know, putting it mildly, we were called an insult to the sport of highlight by the small but fervent group of highlight fans that existed in 2018 when we started playing. But we're like, no, we're, you know, we're going to do this. And, you know, we're sort of like, I don't know, the Bad News Bears of highlight or the Jamaican bobsled team of highlight. We had all these references made about us. But we just pushed forward. We said, hey, we're playing highlight. We're playing professional highlight. So we absorbed sort of all the insults that went along with it, and we persevered. And I'll quick fast forward 3 years, same guys playing. We picked up a few additional players along the way. Kids, one kid who was coming out of high school wanted to be a baseball player, tore his labrum. His dad had been a highlight player like 30 years prior. We picked him up, and just, you know, some wayfarers. And it's 3 years later, and I said to one of our guys here, and our guys are getting better, steadily improving. I said, can we have the United States Highlight Championships here? And everybody kind of looked at me like, what? I'm like, well, do they have those? No, they don't have those. Can we have them? Sure, you can have them. Okay, so we're going to have the United States Highlight Championships. And I get a friend of mine who's a TV editor, producer, filmmaker, basically. And I said, hey, can you come down and film this thing? Sure, he comes down with his film crew. We put on the U.S. National Championships, and it's open to everybody the first year, amateurs, professionals, everybody. Our guys still, everyone has no respect for. So the amateurs come. We have about 75 people that come to play in this tournament. We offer a $25,000 first prize, which in highlight is big money. And one of my guys makes it to the finals and loses in the finals to a player from the Basque region of Spain who was playing at Dania Highlight. And along the way, he beats a couple of these other Spanish players. And that was really the turning of highlight here at Magic City, and the light goes on, and all of a sudden we are no longer the laughing stock. And, you know, these guys have battled through a lot of adversity, and now we're, you know, real professional highlight players. And that was 2 years ago.
It's really amazing. I mean, you know, one of the things we love doing on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show is talking about, you know, how sports have evolved and changed. And you've done some really incredible things within the game of highlight, where you've actually created a new league, created new rules. Tell us a little bit about what you've done and how you've done that with Battle Court.
Sure. So we really believed in the core sport of highlight in the sense that it's the fastest ball sport in the world. You know, it's faster than baseball. It's faster than tennis.
You said 150 miles an hour?
150 miles an hour routinely with some of our players. And the ball is very hard. People watch on TV and they see that it bounces, and they'll make comments like, oh, rubber ball. Far from a rubber ball. It's about as hard as a baseball, but it bounces. So, you know, we're like, well, we got a great core sport here, but it's very confusing the way it's played. The parimutuel format, if people are familiar maybe with tennis, it was like king of the court. So you would play a point against your opponent, and then if you win, you stay out, and the opponent goes to the end of the line, and there's eight guys playing. And we're like, this is too confusing for the American sports fan. And we did a bunch of focus groups with basically sports fans ranging from in their, you know, early 20s up to into their 60s. And, you know, some had heard of Hilai, some hadn't, but they found it very confusing. So I said, well, let's play like tennis. You know, we're on a court. We have serves like tennis. We have out of bounds like tennis. If it bounces twice, you lose the point. Everything is pretty much akin to tennis. So we're going to play it like tennis. You win 6 points, you win a set, you win two sets, you win the match. So just like you're watching the, you know, a tennis match on TV. And we said, all right, now we've got a better format where people can watch either singles or doubles, players going against each other or teams going against each other. And this is great. But what else is Hilai missing? There's no team to root for. You know, in that sense, it was like tennis or golf in that you're rooting for the individual, but we're like Americans or just sports fans in general love team sports. They want to root for their team. So we took our locker room. We had 28 players. We took 24 of the players. We divided them up into teams of six. And we said, all right, we're going to play what we called Battle Court Hilai. And we put six guys on each team. We tried to match them up equal ability. We gave them uniforms. We gave team names. We even, which hopefully we can get into a little bit, we even had team owners, which we thought was a very cool kind of novel concept. And we had our inaugural season of Battle Court Hilai with the six teams playing against each other. And at the end of the season, we had the top two teams play off in a championship. And the Cesta Cyclones won the championship and happened to be owned by Dan Le Batard's show. And his producer was the name acting owner, but Dan's show owned the Cesta Cyclones, and they're taking the prize money, and they're actually offering an NIL, which I don't even know if I'm supposed to say this. I can't say to who, but they're offering a collegiate football player an NIL with their prize money from their Hilai team.
What an amazing story. And I'd love to go dig a little deeper into that. I mean, you talked about bringing owners into the Battle Court League and how that went and how you got Le Batard, right? I mean, I know that I was really excited to see, you know, guys from my team at 76 Capital Sports Advisory, you know, Dan Bravado and Chris Yortsis working with you and the rest of our team and Rick and Brendan and a bunch of the other guys. And I know they were excited about this, but talk about how that process went and how you were able to attract Le Batard and his crew to the world of Hilai.
So the 76 crew has been amazing. And I think maybe early on they thought it was a little crazy. And a lot of people have thought I'm a little crazy, a little unorthodox.
Scott, that's why we love you. We love you because of that. The best entrepreneurs are crazy. You got to be crazy, right?
You just can't give up. You know, you kind of don't take no for an answer. And, you know, progress sometimes gets slow, but then, you know, you sit back and you charge at the wall again and hope something gives. So, you know, I'm a lifelong sports fan. And like I think lots of other sports fans, you kind of run the teams that you root for. I'm a big Red Sox fan, right? You know, and I'm sitting there at home and I'm the manager and I'm the GM and they should have done this and they should have done that. And I'm like, man, there's thousands of us like that out there that would love to have a hand in owning a sports team. And it's just, you know, I mean, look at it these days. I mean, Mark Cuban and Stephen Ross and, you know, the ownership list, you have to be a billionaire to own a major sports team. So he said, let's throw another kind of wrinkle in all this. We're going to have seasonal team ownership of a Hilai franchise. So you don't even have to buy the team. You own them for just one season. You pay and we put a price of $100,000. So everyone looked at me like, who's going to pay $100,000 for a Hilai? I'm like, well, you know, to be an owner in professional sports, $100,000 is really next to nothing. And you write one check and then that's it. You don't have travel expenses. You don't have insurance. You don't have player salaries. You're done, but now you're an owner. You know, you go to the matches, you have a hand in putting your doubles teams together. You meet with your players, you're strategizing. And you also kind of get a little bit of a behind the scenes look at what is it like to be a professional sports owner. So I made two phone calls to friends, you know, admitted friends, and they bought teams. So now it's like a week into this thing and I've sold two teams and your guys and my people here are like, whoa, wait, stop. You can't just sell these to, you know, kind of your friends. It's great. And, you know, they're writing a check for $100,000 each, which was amazing. And it's going to be fun for them, but we need to get like some media coverage. So we said, all right, well, let's see if we can get a couple of media related teams. And the media deal was really a trade deal. You know, you're giving them the team and they're giving you whatever the advertising deal is that you come up with. And if they win the championship, they're going to give their money to charity, or as in the Levitard case, do an NIL deal. So Chris on your team and one of the people, Izzy Havanick here at Magic City, you know, both reached out to the Levitard team, and kind of miraculously, you know, we got a meeting and we went down there and we met with them. And, you know, Dan's good because Dan's a little bit, you know, unorthodox and he likes this stuff. He's a Miami guy, knows Hi-Li. So it was sort of just crazy enough for Dan to say, okay, let's do it. And, you know, we're sitting there in the studios of the Levitard show. And Dan is like, hey, anybody here want to own a Hi-Li team? And Chris Cody, who's his producer, goes, I'm in, you know. And there we go. We have Chris Cody comes out. He meets his team. He's the owner of his team. He comes to the matches. We had another local radio station that.
Before you pass it. So that his team was the Cesta Cyclones. Is that right?
Cesta Cyclones. So, you know, they're now, and they call them, you know, they come up with all these nicknames, and now they're the Cones and the Coneheads and this and that. And, you know, and they're wearing Cyclones merchandise and having a lot of fun on air and really getting into this. And, you know, it was great. And then we got a local Hispanic station, one of the major Hispanic stations down here, who had a female Norwegian born disc jockey, who's the afternoon show host, fluent in Spanish, who played rugby in college, and we sort of trotted it out to the station, and she's like, oh, I want to own this Hi-Li team. So it's basically ends up with, you know, two of my buddies and the Dan Levitard show and this Norwegian born Hispanic female radio station personality. And those are our four owners. So it was great because, you know, it was as eclectic a mix as you could possibly get.
Well, you mentioned the fact that there was a almost like a media trade between you and the Levitard show. What was that like when you were listening and watching the Levitard show, and they're talking about Hi-Li and they're talking about Magic City and they're talking about all their players and the Go Cones and Cyclones and all that stuff? I mean, that must have been amazing for you. I mean, again, as the person who really came up with this whole idea from the beginning, like, here we are, this thing is really starting to go.
Well, it was terrific, Wayne. You're right. And you kind of see it unfold before your eyes. And, you know, it's taken some major leaps forward. Some of them, no thanks to me. Quick anecdote is my daughter does all the social media, which is, I've learned, is vital. You know, traditional media just sometimes doesn't cut it. Social media is great. And she says to me one day, Dad, I think we should live stream the games on TikTok. At that point, I know what TikTok is. I'm like, live stream our games? How are you going to even do that? She goes, no, I'll have someone there with an iPhone and we'll just live stream the games. I said, and people are going to watch that? She's like, Dad, people will watch it. So I'm like, I think you're crazy. I don't know if it's because she is my daughter, I let her do it, because I certainly wouldn't have said the things I said to her that I would say to a normal employee, like, you're crazy. And this is probably the worst idea I've ever heard of. First day, 50,000 unique views of the TikTok on live stream. So we're eating a lot of humble pie in my household. And now my daughter definitely thinks she's a lot smarter than me. And now, you know, so we've been doing it and we're averaging 100,000 unique views every time for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hour iPhone live stream of the Hi-Li matches. So it's amazing. And I look at the chat and these are primarily younger people who don't know what the sport is. They have no idea what they're watching. They see like this ball going really fast and these guys are wearing this sort of thing strapped to their arm that people don't quite know what it is. And they're like, what the hell is this sport? So every day, 3 days a week, 100,000 people or more at the Battle Court Championships, 176,000 unique views. So that's become our number one way to introduce fans to the sport, which is fantastic.
Well, that thing strapped on their arm, that's the Cesta, correct?
That is correct.
And I remember you showing me one of those for the first time in person in Miami when I was down there, and you gave me that great tour of all of Magic City as well as the Fronton. And, you know, we talked about a lot of these things, and I loved all your ideas and all the things you were working on. And you mentioned the live streaming side, and it's been interesting, but also some of the interesting videos that you do on TikTok and that we see on Instagram and other places as well. What is your thinking behind that, and what's that all about?
Well, I mean, honestly, I've let my daughter really run with that. What I tell her is I have ideas that are probably from, you know, someone who's grew up in the 70s and 80s, and then she applies them to 2022. And I have to sit back and be fine with the irreverence. And I am. I mean, we've run the gamut on these TikToks. It's been amazing. I mean, our number one, which had 10 million views and still being viewed, is really explaining how the game is played, which was more what I envisioned. But then, you know, we've got these TikToks of, we have three sets of brothers that play for us. And, you know, we've used them to play off and do, you know, who, you know, the two brothers are sitting there and, you know, does dad love you more or you more? And, you know, pointing at each other or this, or who's messier, who's neater, you know, this kind of stuff. So all kinds of stuff like that. The guys, I have to say, the locker room is amazing because these guys really understand that they're trying to save a sport. And in a lot of cases, they had been athletes in other sports and you know, their careers were over. So it's a second chance you, and it's a saving a sport. So they are all in on doing whatever they need to do to promote the sport. So the social media people tell them, you know, you dress up in a chicken suit and run around on the court, and they're like, I'm in, you know, whatever it takes. And it's crazy because, you know, I see some TikToks, I think they're great. They get 3,000 views, and then I see others and I'm like, oh, who would ever watch this? 2 days later, they're at 250,000 views, you know, so you kind of never know what's going to be viewed and what people are going to like, but they certainly seem like they like the educational videos and they love getting insights into the players, you know, kind of behind the scenes. We did one where the players all driving in, and so you could see what kind of car each player drove, and they pull right up and they say, you know, I'm so-and-so and I'm driving a, you know, a Land Rover or a RAV4 or whatever it might be. And the fans love that. So insights into our athletes seem to really work well.
Well, it really seems that way. And it's been really fun to watch and get to know the different players. I mean, you know, talk about that a little bit more. I mean, some of the things that they've done and how they've become more than just a number player, you know, in highlight, and how you've really been able to almost like, you know, really personalize the game for the fans.
One of the things that bothered me about highlight when I was watching it as a fan is the players were very emotionless. And I always used to ask the guys why, you know, you really couldn't tell who won or who lost at the end of a match. And they're like, that's how they were raised in the Basque country. You know, at the end of a match, you know, you congratulate your opponent, you walk off the court. You're not supposed to show emotion. And I'm like, that's not going to cut it here. So I'm in our locker room telling our guys, listen, celebrate. Have fun. I want fans to know that you're putting everything on the line, win or lose. And the guys that, you know, are the sort of governance here, I have a player manager and an announcer who oversee the locker room. And these guys are out there, you know, and when they lose, the swears are flying and they're fining the guys left and right. And, you know, I see $25 fine, $50 fine, $100 fine. I'm behind the scenes paying the fines for the players because I'm the one who's telling them, oh, go out and do whatever you want. You know, we got one guy, when he wins, he does a somersault. You know, I mean, all this kind of stuff. I'm like, have fun out there. You know, sports are changing. It's not the way it was, you know, years and years ago. You need to celebrate. You need to show your personalities. And they have. And, you know, they've almost taken on personas of their own. And I said, listen, every sport has, you know, the white hats and the black hats. There's players that people love and there's players people love to hate across every sport. So choose your persona, you know, be whoever you want to be out there. And they have. And, you know, some of them a little more difficult to come out of their shell, especially for some of the Spanish players. I heard a couple of expletives the other day from one of my Spanish players that just shocked me because this is like a young kid who I didn't even think ever said those words before. And I go, he's clearly adapted to our program. Perfect. He fits right in.
That's amazing. You know, one of the things that, you know, betting has always been in the middle of High Lie. It's always been one of the things that, you know, anytime I mention High Lie to people here, you know, in the Northeast, they're like, oh, I remember going down to Miami with my grandparents and we got to bet on High Lie, right? In the, you know, and they talk about their, you know, live in the 70s and 80s kind of a thing. So, you know, you've done some pretty unique things with betting in High Lie as well. And how have you done that?
We started off with the traditional parimutuel format and it really just wasn't cutting it. And we're like, you know what, now that we're changing and we're playing it like tennis, we really need to be in a sports wagering mode, not a parimutuel mode. And of course, sports wagering is sweeping across the country. And that was sort of the next mission for me a few years ago, because I knocked on a lot of doors and everyone's like, High Lie, no. And you know, that's not a sports wagering sport. And I'm like, no, we've got it figured out. It's going to be like tennis. And the guys at Rush Street, Bet Rivers, like threw the doors wide open. Their CEO, their CFO, their president. First of all, they all knew the sport, which was tremendous. And they were all fans of the sport. And it was like, we want High Lie. You want us. You know, they're smart business people. They tied us up on an exclusive basis in North America. But you're certainly willing to give someone an exclusive when they're the only ones that will, you know, that will even give you the time of day. So, and it's been a great partnership. You know, we've had to get licensed state by state. We're currently licensed in 8 states. We're licensed now in the province of Ontario. And as of today, we're going to the country of Mexico. This is day one in Mexico. So we're incredibly excited. You know, we think the Mexican market is going to be a great market. Ontario has been surprisingly strong. And, you know, we're working our way through these various states in the U.S. and trying to teach them High Lie. And, it's a challenge, but it's, you know, it's an opportunity, Wayne. And that's, we see it as, let's go, you know, let's teach people what the sport is. Let's get them excited about the sport. And, you know, they see these athletes giving 110%, guys, you know, diving on a concrete floor, sacrificing body. All they wear is a helmet. There's no other padding, you know, so it's kind of crazy. Look at hockey players and, you know, what they wear and, you know, with a puck coming at them. And this is a ball 150 miles an hour and all the guys have is a helmet. So pretty dramatic, pretty dangerous, a lot of fun, and it's got the betting component. And that really kind of sucks in everybody, because if you can be a casual fan or you can be someone who's like, I can make some money doing this.
Well, I remember when, you know, we first met, actually it was through Matt Holt from US Integrity, and it was right in the middle of the pandemic in Miami, and we're talking, and you told me about, in, you know, when you were able to get Billy Corbin to come and film a documentary film of what you were doing. You know, I loved watching it. It was awesome. It gave me kind of the feel and everything that you're trying to do there. We got to maybe tell us about that, but you got to have Billy come back and see what's going on now, because you've really, it's been leaps and bounds from when he was there.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the genesis of the documentary, which is called Magic City Hustle, and we are very, very proud of it, is, you know, Billy's an internationally acclaimed documentarian, and he happens to live here in Miami. And someone reached out to Billy on my behalf and said, hey, you know, Magic City is starting this High Lie program, might be something that you want to get involved in. And Billy said, not interested. High Lie is a dead sport. I don't want anything to do with it. And I am not a very good salesman. I don't consider myself a good salesman. But I said, let me talk to Billy. So got me Billy on the phone. I said, Billy, I would like you to do me a favor. I'd like you to go to North Miami Amateur High Lie, see these guys, meet a couple of these guys. And then if you don't want to make the documentary, I fully understand. So about a week later, I get a call from Billy and hello. And he goes, I'm making it. I go, what? He goes, I'm making the documentary. I go, what happened? He goes, I went to North Miami Amateur High Lie. I met those guys. He goes, one condition. This is what I call a verite. So whatever happens, happens. He goes, Scott, you got to let me film this the way I want to film it. And, you know, whatever comes out, comes out. He goes, if they make it, great. If they don't make it, great. If one of them kills somebody, great. It's all going to be in the film. I'm like, Billy, you make the film. So he makes the film. I mean, he absolutely loves making the film. He said it was a great experience. We put it in the Miami International Film Festival. It wins Outstanding Documentary. You know, and it's great because it really documents the beginnings, how bad they were and how hard they worked. And, you know, one of the questions I get asked, we're 5 years later now, and if you come watch our highlight, these guys are the best in the world. I mean, we're playing this afternoon and I've got the best singles player in the world and the second best singles player in the world and probably the two best doubles teams in the world. And everyone goes, well, what happened to those guys that you started with 5 years ago? They're all gone now, right? I go, no, 10 of them are still here. They just worked that hard to get that good so that they can, you know, be professional highlight players. So the dedication was amazing. The backstories that these guys had, I think that's, you know, sort of what got Billy is he meets one guy and, you know, this guy had been a player in the NFL, has a Super Bowl ring, 5 years in the NFL, was an auxiliary cop in Georgia, and comes back. He went to the University of Miami, moves back down here to learn how to play highlight. And he's here 5 years later. He's still here playing and loving it. And he's one of the major contributors in our program.
What an amazing story. So Scott, you know, looking at your career, I mean, could you ever imagine that we'd be sitting here today talking about highlight and the rebirth of this industry? I mean, you're someone who for many, many years now have been, you know, successfully running casinos in South Florida. Tell us your story and how you got here.
Well, a quick reference to highlight, because you said how you know, people would go back in the day. I went to highlight when I was 16 in Hartford, Connecticut, to Hartford highlight, because you needed to be 18, but highlight would let you in at 16 and let you bet and serve you drinks. And everybody I meet has the same story. That's, you know, you could get in, you could bet, and you could have a beer, which when you're 16 was a pretty big deal. And you had the fake ID. And I guess they didn't closely examine the fake IDs. They just looked at that, you know, basically your birthday and you're okay. But my backstory really is I grew up in a sports family. We actually owned a minor league football team and something called the Atlantic Coast Football League. And this is back in the 70s. There's no minor league football then. You had college, but there were a lot of guys who didn't go to college. And we were sort of a league where these guys could play. We put several guys into the NFL. So I'm a kid seeing this and loving it. My family sponsored a couple of tennis tournaments down here in South Florida. And I was fortunate enough to meet guys like Rod Laver and Cliff Drysdale, you know, kind of legends of tennis. So sports has always been in my family. And then we owned racehorses my whole life. We owned a lot of racehorses. And that put me on a path where eventually I became the head of the, call it the Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association. But basically, it's like the players' union. I represented all the owners of racehorses in the United States. And I would bargain with specific racetracks for contracts. From that, I was hired to run Gulfstream Park Racetrack. And so I did that for 6 years, and that morphed into a casino, one of the first casinos down here in Florida. And then 16 years ago, the Havanick family reached out and said, would you be interested in coming to our dog track and hopefully to be a casino someday? And I said, absolutely. And we ran a referendum. We built a casino. And, you know, I knew horse racing really well, and I knew dog racing really well. And I had this very limited knowledge of highlight from a kid growing up, but you know, it was down here in Florida. And sort of the turning moment on highlight was I'm at Dania highlight. We were managing and running Dania highlight. And the very first thing I had to do as the president over there was negotiate the union contract with the highlight players. And they had all kinds of demands. And I'm like, I don't understand how you guys can even make demands and sport's dead. And I go, I could get a bunch of guys, you know, anywhere to play highlight. I don't need you guys. And they're like, oh yes, you do, because there's no highlight players out there. And my direct question to them was, so you're telling me if I go get a bunch of college athletes that have never played highlight before, I can't teach them to play highlight? And they're like, no, we grow up playing highlight like American kids grow up, football, baseball, basketball, 5 years before they could even be proficient to catch and throw. Challenge issued, and that was it. And that was the genesis of, in 2017, saying, we're going to switch from dog racing to highlight. And I know how we can get highlight players. And, you know, made believers out of the guys that told me it couldn't be done. And that was a lot of fun, Wayne, because you know how that feels when someone tells you can't do something, you know, that's too big a challenge to let it lay there.
Well, I think that's what really drew me and sort of attracted me to want to figure out ways that we can work together. And it's, I love your sort of never say never type attitude. And it's just, it's amazing. Your overall persistence and really pushing things forward. And I really appreciate you joining us on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. And as we start to wind down, Scott, I really wanted to ask you, you know, what's next? I mean, you know, what's next? This crazy idea. You got it off the ground. It's more than off the ground. You brought in the Levitards of the world, you know, into this, and the social media is really taking off, and the traditional media deals that you've been able to do as well are starting to really happen. So what's the next big thing that's going to come down the pike that we should keep our eye out for?
I think it's ratcheting up the ownership, really, really letting people know, hey, you want to be a professional sports owner, start here with Highlight. You're going to love it. It, you know, it's not a lot of money in the scheme of professional sports ownership. And I think from that, we can springboard to multiple cities. There's no reason that we only can play Highlight in Miami. You know, I've been approached about potentially Vegas, someone even threw out Dubai the other day to me. And I'm like, hey, you know, let's go. You know, we need more players. We need more owners. And then we need a few other venues to play in. But I'm hoping that 5 years from now, you know, there's 16 teams playing in maybe four different cities and a lot more people out there who know the sport of Highlight and love it.
Well, Scott, that's awesome. I know that we're going to see Highlight in Dubai. You're going to see it in Vegas. You'll see it all over the place. I know that you'll be the one behind this. You and your daughter and the rest of your team, you know, and all the things that you've done it has been amazing. And, you know, look, if anyone has an opportunity to go down to Miami and go to Magic City and see what's going on there, it's absolutely incredible. And also, Scott, why don't you share with everyone else, you don't even have to come to Miami. How else can you watch and view and bet on Magic City Highlight?
So many ways to watch the sport. And I want to thank you and your team for really making that possible. We have distribution on FTF, which is For the Fan Sports. We have watchhighlight.com. We have the Highlight app, which is available in the App Store. I hope very, very shortly some major announcements with some other outlets for distribution that'll be worldwide. So we're really, really excited. We're in, I think, about 125 million homes right now, but that could double or triple in short order. So very excited. And as you said, lots of ways. There's even Highlight TV out there. So many, many ways to watch us. On TV, live stream, linear, digital, and people are watching, which is great.
And betting, right, on Bet Rivers.
So betting on Bet Rivers, and the betting is essentially doubled in the last 60 days. So everything is moving on up.
Well, congratulations on everything so far, Scott. It is totally so far. It's only the beginning. You got to check it all out. Again, thanks so much for joining us on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. Wish you the best of luck, and I hope to see you in Miami soon.
Can't wait to see you. Thank you, Wayne.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate you joining us on our 76 Capital Leadership Show.